My name is Emily Adrian, and my new novel is called Seduction Theory.
Emily Adrian's new novel, Seduction Theory, tests the limits of a marriage. Ethan and Simone are husband and wife. They are also colleagues in a creative writing program where their MFA student, Robbie, decides to use them as subjects for her thesis. Ethan's affair and Robbie's infatuation with Simone further complicate matters. I recently spoke with Emily Adrian about her new work, Robbie's unreliable position as a storyteller, and how her own experiences as a writer do, or sometimes don't, make their way onto the page. From KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network, this is Marginalia. I'm Beth Golay, and here's my conversation with Emily Adrian. So could you give our listeners a brief description of Seduction Theory?
Yeah, Seduction Theory is about a pair of very sort of charismatic professors who are famous on the college campus where they teach creative writing. And they are very much in love with each other, but they are also finding themselves in middle age to be quite unfaithful to each other. And their indiscretions are brought to light in a thesis written by one of their own graduate students.
Writers are told to write what you know. And yet on the copyright page is a disclaimer included by publishers and works of fiction. In your book, it reads, "The characters and events in this book are fictitious. Any similarity to real persons, living or dead, is coincidental and not intended by the author." Now, anyone reading this book is surely tempted to explore your bona fides. Where did you receive your MFA? Who taught creative writing in your program? Do they bear any resemblance to the characters in this book or to the characters in your narrator's book? Now, I didn't look up your credentials, nor will I, but there's something a bit delicious in the idea that disclaimer doesn't exactly apply to a work of fiction like this, does it?
Well, I think it still does. And I think this is brought home by the fact that I don't have an MFA. I did not go to grad school. This is all extremely made up. But it's interesting that you ask that because I have noticed that more than with any of my previous books, readers have conflated or are tempted to conflate Robbie with me. And it is, I mean, it is a sort of meta-fictional novel. And so she, you know, she is self-conscious as a narrator. Her story is motivated. She is writing the book. And, you know, the structure of the novel is that the book you are reading is the book that she wrote. But she is entirely a character of my own invention. But I almost appreciate, I think, that when you're reading, it's easy to forget that, and that you really do sort of believe her as an author in her own right.
So let's talk about Robbie as a narrator. Roberta Green is a graduate student in the MFA program. And when we discover who is telling the story, it's pretty clear that she's not a reliable firsthand witness to some of the scenarios she spells out for us. She rewrites parts of the story multiple times, including different versions of the same situations in the text. So talk to me about your decision to tell the story from this point of view and to include the rewrites as part of the text.
I was interested in the idea of marriage as a project that is really personal and private, and at the same time has this element of performance, especially in certain contexts and in certain environments. You know, there is the reality of your relationship behind closed doors, and then there is the way you present yourself individually and how a couple presents themselves to the world. And this is really heightened in the world of the novel because Ethan and Simone are sort of local celebrities. Their students idolize them. They have both written about each other. They have this sort of sexy public intellectual romance. And so to me, it felt like I needed that sort of outsider's perspective to paint the full picture of who they are and what kind of pressure they're under when the cracks in their marriage start to show. And life on a college campus, I think, especially for the people who are really prominent on campus, can feel kind of like a fishbowl. You know, you feel like there are people watching you, there are people judging you, there are people who are invested in the narrative of your personal life. And so I loved the project of, on one hand, just writing this straight ahead story about a couple in middle age. And on the other hand, showing how subjective that story is and how much the public presentation of it might be different from the reality of it or the intimacy of it. And Robbie is, you know, she is a student. She is sort of using her thesis as a opportunity to enact literary revenge against her professor with whom she is in love. But she's very conscious of like what the limits of her own imagination are and what the limits of her own real life observations are. And so on the page, she makes clear that she is sort of building this story from the ground up, and there are different ways that she could tell it. And she's in pursuit of some kind of truth, but it's not necessarily accuracy that she's after. And so that's why I wanted to show her kind of working her way through these questions on the page.
And I just want to acknowledge just how meta this was. You know, although Robbie is telling the story and is one of the major players, she doesn't insert herself into the story until we've been introduced to and know more about Simone and Ethan. And this is so similar to what she tells Simone when receiving feedback on the first three chapters, that she's going to insert herself more later. But I want to talk a bit about your writing style, which conveys to the reader Robbie's voice, her judgment, her humor. And here's an example of what I'm talking about, and is a passage where Robbie is observing Simone and Ethan. The monogamy she practiced with that oversized, droopy-lidded man was the most cringe-inducing thing about her. On winter weekends, he wore a hooded sweatshirt under a leather jacket. The way he ordered a coffee, you knew his dad had never loved him. Where does Robbie's voice come from, and do you share this same dry sense of humor with her?
Yeah, definitely. I think if there is an element of the story that is me, it is Robbie's sense of humor. And I think her voice was kind of an exercise in specificity. I wanted her to be very attuned to weird details that the reader can't imagine on their own. So Robbie very rarely sort of uses space to describe what the reader might just visualize automatically, even in the way she presents like dialogue between the people she's writing about. She never includes them saying, you know, hello or goodbye. There's no small talk either in actual scenes of conversation or in Robbie's narrative or interiority. She tells you what you were never, ever going to be able to fill in on your own. And I think that's both where the voice comes from and where that kind of unexpected curveball humor comes from.
Well, I love that you say that because there was also this line. The first time he watched his wife attempt to play, Ethan understood Simone had never been a child, but a patient passenger of her youth. You have to really be a student of human nature to come up with observations like this, don't you?
I hope so. Thank you.
There was a moment in the book when Simone and Robbie were talking, and Simone said, "In a good story, you only ever need three details to depict a party: something someone said, a smell, and a song that played." And then we saw this technique used again and again throughout the novel. Can you talk to me about this idea? Is it your own, or something that was taught to you, not in an MFA program, but maybe in a different in a different class?
No, I mean, I was kind of riffing on the cliche of professors being these kind of oracles, you know, and kind of spitting out these little wisdoms that really get lodged into your head and follow you around as you develop your own voice as a writer, and that you only look back on later thinking like, does that even make sense? Like, is that good advice? And I think, or the way it came about in the manuscript was I had put those three details into the very first scene on the first couple of pages where they're at this faculty party. And I think this, I can't remember, the smell is like somebody's sandalwood perfume and the song is Lola by the Kinks or something. And that felt almost like sort of stereotypical MFA writing to me. So I went back and kind of made fun of myself by having Simone use that as her stock advice to her own students and having Robbie kind of imitate it as the book goes on. I didn't get an MFA, but I did study creative writing as an undergrad. And I have always been, I think, a little bit self-conscious about not having received a graduate education. And I sometimes hear people or hear, writers in who are sort of my contemporaries rehash what they learned in grad school and sort of hold up as the gold standard. And I'm always thinking, oh, like nobody told me that. Like, should I know that? If you go back and look at my books, have I broken this rule in a million embarrassing ways? And of course, it's most of it is incredibly silly and incredibly particular to one program or one teacher or even one workshop. But I wanted to kind of riff on that idea with Robbie and Simone's relationship.
So toward the end of the book, Robbie is focusing more on her writing, and she reflects, "Opening the laptop day after day, I realized it had happened. I was what I wanted to be when I grew up." Does this reflect you at all? Did you always know you wanted to be a writer?
Yeah, definitely. I have had that feeling of being what I wanted to be when I grew up. I don't know that I've had it about writing. I've had it about my own marriage. I've had it about being a mom. I feel like it's such a fantasy that you could feel that satisfied with yourself as a writer. And maybe I gave it to Robbie, having really only known that feeling in other parts of my life.
Are you a Boston qualifier?
I wish. Not even close.
Oh. So, do you have a hope for what readers will take away from this novel?
Yes, I think what I most wanted to do was write about a long-term romantic relationship that is deeply flawed and messed up and old. Like they've been together most of their lives at this point. And show that it can still be really high stakes and dramatic and urgent, even though the question is not like, will these people end up together, but will they stay together and at what cost?
Well, the book is Seduction Theory. Emily Adrian, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Emily Adrian, author of the book Seduction Theory, which was published by Little Brown. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita and is part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. Our producers are Haley Krausen and Katie Lanning, and our marketing coordinator is Carly Cooper. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.
These days, there's so much news, it can be hard to keep up with what it all means for you, your family, and your community. The Consider This podcast from NPR features our award-winning journalism. 6 days a week, we bring you a deep dive on a news story and provide the context and analysis that helps you make sense of the news. We get behind the headlines. We get to the truth. Listen to the Consider This podcast from NPR.